like to read you an article from The Vision written by Swami Ram Dass. The title of it is, You Are the Image of the Eternal. It is by pure devotion that you can purify your heart and lay it at the feet of your eternal beloved. Devotion to him means a keen aspiration for his vision and the resultant continuous remembrance of him. Do not be beguiled by various methods of approach to him. This is the simplest path. Look upon the beloved as your sole aim and goal. To discover your kinship with him is the one purpose of your life. To seek union with him and realize his presence in you and everywhere around you is the object for which you are born as a human being. You know, craving for material wealth, glory, status, and fame do not bring you real peace and freedom. To be with the beloved, to know that you and he are one, and to live ever in this exalted consciousness means a joy and ecstasy which cannot be described in words. It is really a matter for supreme wonder that while the beloved is ever residing within you, you are not aware of it. You have not to go far to behold him, or he has to come to you from afar. He pervades your being through and through, as also the entire universe before you. All your activities are inspired by his will and power. For the matter of that, this power alone is responsible for all movements in this world manifestation. So in this ultimate vision and realization of the beloved, you become conscious of your perfect identity with him in all of his aspects. You are a veritable embodiment of divine bliss and peace. The above blissful state is achieved easily by cherishing towards the beloved genuine love and devotion. It is now that the beloved's grace floods your life and transmutes you into his very image and being. Bible reading tonight is from chapter 22, beginning with verse 35. One of them asked, this was a lawyer, then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is likened to it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. I want to talk to you tonight about your body temple, which is the house of the Lord. I want to start by telling you a story of a pilgrim who started on his spiritual journey. And he got halfway up the mountain, and he could go no further. And he lay there totally exhausted. He tried to move his limbs. He tried to call out for help. But he could do neither. He could go no further. He was absolutely stuck there. It seemed as though he couldn't go down, he couldn't go up, he couldn't go sideways. So finally he lay there and he called out to the Lord, Lord, help me. You must help me to climb the mountain. All of a sudden he opened his eyes because he felt a presence in front of him. And that presence looked like a man. The man was silent and strong and beautiful. And he said, Yes, my son, what is it? He said, Lord, I have started the journey to climb up the mountain so that I might be one with you. And he said, I have come only halfway, and I am unable to go any further. You must help me. And he said to him, my son, the reason you have not been able to climb any further, he said, is that you have not set your house in order. Oh, he said, my house, I left that long ago, far behind me, and he shuddered. The Lord said, perhaps you did, my son, he said, but obviously it has not yet left you. There is work for you to do yet in your house. You must descend the mountain again and set your house in order. He said, then when you set your house in order, not only will you be able to climb the mountain, but he said, I shall come to you and I shall help you. Well, the man cried out in pain. He didn't want to go back down at all. He looked every which way to see if he couldn't find a way of evading what the Lord had asked him to do. But at last he could find no reason why he should just remain there, unable to go forward. And he went back down the mountain, all the weary way. He went up the path toward his house, and he took out the key behind the flower pot, and he opened the door. And he saw much disorder in the house. He had always prided himself and in feeling that he had kept a pretty decent sort of house. But now as he looked around it, he saw that the house indeed was not as it should be. So he cleaned it the best he could. While he was at the mountain with the Lord, he told the Lord, he said, Lord, there are even doors in my house which I have never dared to open. I cannot go back down there. And the Lord said that he must go back. So having cleaned the house initially, he stood before the first door. It took him a long time before he could get courage to even stand there. And as he stood there, a terrible fear overtook him. He said, I'm afraid. I am filled with fear. I cannot open the door. But he forced himself to open the door. And there it was all gloomy. The place was filled with cobwebs. In the dim light that shone through the door, he saw a wraith-like creature that looked something like himself, cowering on the floor. And as he went in, he struck a light, and he looked at the creature, and his heart was open to him. He felt great pity for him. And he said to him, come, I will take you out of this dark room, and I will see to it that your room is clean. So he took the poor figure out, and he took care of him, and he went in, and he scoured the room, and he scoured the lamps, and he scoured the windows, and he scoured everything until the room was absolutely meticulously clean. And he lived with the poor wraith, and gradually, as he got used to him, day after day, one day the sunlight shone in the room, and as he looked for the wraith, it was gone. He had absorbed the fear that had been this wraith outside of himself. Well, he waited a while because it took great courage to go again to the second door. But finally, he geared himself to that. And one day, he walked up to the second door. And all of a sudden, he doubled up in pain. And he said, oh, I hurt. And still he knew that he must open that door no matter how he hurt. It felt like something was a spear piercing his bones. But he took hold of the handle of the door and he walked in. And again, in the dim light, he saw another wraith that looked like himself, just bent all over and writhing in pain. And he said, you poor creature, come with me and I shall take care of you. And he took the wraith out and he took care of him. And he went back and he cleaned the room until it was absolutely sparkling. The floors were clean, the walls were clean, the lamps were polished, the windows were polished, everything was absolutely spotless. And he went out and he continued living with the poor, sick, and hurting wraith until again one day the sunlight came into the room and the wraith had disappeared. And he knew that he had conquered both fear and pain. It took him a little while before he had gained courage again to go to the third door. But finally he did. And as he stood outside of the door, he felt his whole body getting hot with anger. Oh, he was angry. Anyone who had come before him would have been killed. He was so filled with anger. But he grabbed the knob of the door and he thrust it open. And there he saw a great demon-like figure that looked like himself. And he conquered his fear as best he could of him, and he walked in because he knew that this was something he must do also. And he walked up and took the man, and he said, "Come." He said, "I shall take care of you also." So he took this demon out, and he worked with him for weeks, for days, and for months. And he cleaned the room, he polished it all up, until finally, one day, that which had caused him anger had disappeared into the sunlight. Now, it took him 2 or 3 years before he could get up sufficient courage to open the fourth door. And as he stood outside, he felt his body starting to writhe with his passion. And he felt all the delicious thrills over his body. And a longing for something he knew not what. He finally took hold of the door and he opened it and he saw a creature lying on the bed, half man, half woman, stark naked. And the creature was writhing. And it was writhing in all directions, holding out its arms to him, begging him to come, saying, "I must have you, I must have you. I must have this that I call love. You must satisfy my longing." And he walked into the room and he looked at the creature. The creature looked at him with begging eyes. "Come to me, indulge in me." And he said, "No, not anymore." And he took the creature by the arms and he said, "I shall conquer you. It's the last thing I shall ever do." And he took the creature out. And it is not known how long he had to wrestle with this creature called passion. But he finally conquered that. And he cleaned out that room in his house. And finally, he was filled with the light of God. And he sat and rested. And he thought his work was all done. But just as he was feeling at peace with himself, he saw another small door open and a bony arm reach out. And he realized that it was the hand of death. And he said, "Oh, I have not made death my friend. I must make death my friend." So he went to that door, and as he opened it, expecting to see the figure of death, instead he saw the great radiant figure of the Lord before him. And he said, "Now, my son, you have cleaned your house. You have set your house in order. Come with me, and I shall take you to the mountaintop." It's one of the most beautiful stories I think I have ever read, and I wanted to share it with you. Because these are the things within each of us that we must conquer. Remember that it's said in this Bible verse this evening, these verses, "You shall love the Lord with all of thy heart." Now that means that your heart must not be open to anything but the Lord, because He is all things. He is omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipotent. He is everything there is. And He is that life, that power, that love, that peace, that everything that is wonderful within yourself. So until you love him with all of your heart, so that you are willing to give up everybody and everything that you hold dear to you, you are not obeying the Lord's command. You must love him with all of your soul. You cannot be a house divided against itself and expect to stand. Nor can you expect to start to climb up the mountaintop or the mountain and reach the summit, because it will not happen. You must give him all of your soul. Most of us are halfway in between, and sometimes it's only one-tenth with the Lord, if it is that much. And the other nine-tenths are with the opposing force. And the attention is upon everything but God. God also said that you must love him with all of your mind. That means that your mind should dwell on nothing but the Lord. Nothing at all. And there's only one way to keep the mind in constant communion with God. And that is to repeat his holy name to yourself. Do it from the time you wake up in the morning until the time you go to bed. Now you say, how can I work and still repeat the name of the Lord? But if you get in the habit of it, it will glue your mind to him. And you can do the most brilliant work. You can keep your mind on the Lord, because he is forever in the background. And his name, his word, is forever constantly humming within yourself. And he will do the most brilliant work through you that you ever saw in all of your life. And you must love him with all of your strength. That means all the power that is within you. And you have untapped power that you don't even dream of. If you would stop scattering your energy in all directions and bring all of the parts of yourself that you have put into all of the earthly pleasures, all of the people that you fancy you love, and bring all of this attention back and take it inside of yourself into this temple, which is indeed the house of the Lord, and offer it all to him with all of your heart, with all of your mind, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. You would find power within you that you never even dreamed of. And that power can be used for many things. But you must use that power only for good. Only for God. Never to invade anyone else's privacy. Never to use power over them. Never to do anything but to let that power flow through you. And in full surrender to God, let him use it in those places and with those people that he so wills. When you are an empty vessel, empty of all of the humanness within you, then the Lord comes in all of his glory, and you divinize your whole body. This doesn't mean that you cease to be a human being, that you cease to have the ability to have fun, to live in the world, to laugh, to play, to work, to do all of the things that everyone else does. But you do it in the conscious oneness with God, because he is the Lord and the master, finally, of his own house, which is your body temple. And that pseudo-self, that which you now call you, has disappeared from existence. The only thing that is left is the little part that remembers that once it was the Son of Man, the human self, the human ego. But now it has become the Son of God, but it acts as the witness of what the Christ, who has taken over your temple and dwells there, does within you. How tremendous it is to have this feeling of purity, of innocence. Remember that it says in there that you must become as a little child in order to enter the kingdom of heaven. And it means what it says, that you can laugh, you can play, you can dance, you can act like a little child. This does not mean to be childish, but childlike. It does not mean to let your human ego take over and think that you are greater than anybody else, that you have greater talents, that nobody else has a chance but you. Because in truth, each and every one of us in our human status are absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. We just think we are. Because this in truth is the house, the temple not made by hands. When we can come to that state of surrender, when every thought, every word, every action, every moment of our lives is surrendered to Him, and we listen for His voice of direction, and we do whatever that voice tells us to do, in full humility, knowing that of ourselves we do nothing, that it is our Father who doeth the works. It is then and then alone that our life becomes a glorious thing, a successful thing. You can never expect success. You can never expect to reach your full potential until you put Him first, not last. Seek ye first God and His kingdom, and then alone, will all of the other things be added unto you. Still we keep hope. Lord, if you will give me this, if you will do this for me, if you will take this away from me, then I will do all of these things that you ask of me, but not until you give me what I want first. And it will never happen, I tell you. Never in this world. You have to give Him all of yourself. And you have to learn to love your neighbor as yourself. And that neighbor isn't just the person next door. It starts with you yourself. That neighbor which you call your human self. You have to learn to have a good self-image, to learn that you are the temple of the Lord and that He is that indwelling presence and that He is a very important person. You have to learn to live with the members of your family in total love and harmony, forgetting yourself in service not to them as individual human beings, but to God in them. And for all the flack that you get, for all the dissension that comes at you, the opposition, know that that is the Lord in that form, doing what is necessary to absolutely push you to your oneness with God. Because where does a human being have to go but up when he has nobody or nothing else to depend on but God? And if that one in that form in your family serves that purpose, then bless him or her beyond all others. And love them. Love God in them. And then your neighbors around you. And the people you work with. And the people all over the world. Send out that Christ love to them. Because whatever you send forth from yourself will return in kind. As you sow, so shall ye reap. As ye give, so shall ye receive. And in these troubled times, this is needed as it was never before needed on this earth in the history of mankind. We have to change this stream of hatred, of lust, of violence, of power, of these hungry power people that are destroying the world, and make it a fit and a safe place where we can dwell again in comfort and in safety with our families and our friends. What have we turned this world into? Because this world is the sum total of every single thing that has gone out from each and every one of us. Because even the flicker of your eyelash carries with it its own vibration and returns in kind. There is not one single thing that does not fit this law. It is the law of the universe. Whatever goes up must come down. Whatever seed is planted in the ground will bear the fruit of its own likeness. And you have that power in your hands. Think of the power, that unleashed, unthought of power that is within you, that you could change your life, your world, and you do it through the power of positive thinking, of positive action, with no thought of harm or hatred or enmity toward anyone, but with the thought of how can I serve first God and then God in every human being that I meet. And if you will keep up with that thought and with that desire and follow it up with action, you will find that your tree of effort will bear the greatest fruit in the world. But you cannot put it forth positively one day and cancel it out with negative thoughts, negative words, negative actions the next day and expect to see results, because it will not happen. And you yourself have caused it not to happen because you have canceled out that which you have put forth positively as good. You've got to keep it going. As I mentioned before, Dr. Peel's book, The Power of Positive Thinking, is one of the most powerful things that any man has ever given to humanity. It started a whole new line of thought. It's been in the scriptures since the beginning, but it was not brought to man's attention in the graphic way that this man has brought it. He has done a great thing for humanity. All the psychologists now are trying to dig us out of the graves of our own making. And what we have stored up in the subconscious and comes out in the various troubles and trials and tribulations, sometimes beyond our control, all of these things are creatures of our own making. We have been delving into so many things. I picked up a magazine today and I saw a very evil face looking out of there. And if you send so much money, this man will tell you how to have power over other people's minds. What are we coming to? People are going to couch readers every day, wanting to be regressed to former incarnations. I have seen people who have done this. I have known them before they have done it, and I have seen them since. And believe me, they are not the same people. Because don't forget, we are on an evolutionary path. And what we have done in the past has brought us to this moment. And it is said that if the soul continues to progress to its final union with God, then the things that it has done in the past, God mercifully blocks out of our consciousness. If He wanted us to know, and if He does want us to know, He will tell us. We should not interfere. Because when you go back into these former lifetimes, you can dredge up some things and make them a part of this present personality, things that you had forgotten about, that lay dormant, and that you have the opportunity for overcoming. And you do not do it. Instead, your curiosity as to whether you are a king or the queen of Sheba or Cleopatra or whatever. It is amazing how many Alexander the Greats and how many Cleopatras and Anthonys and all that people have been told they are all over the world, and all for the almighty dollar. I don't want anybody delving into the in-between stages. I want you to fix your attention upon God through Christ. Keep your mind on Him alone, and not go into these other things, because they will cause you nothing but trouble. There are many methods to help clean out the subconscious mind. But don't forget, when that house cleaning takes place, you've got to deal with the empty space. You've got to set your house in order. You just haven't cleaned it out so that you can go back out and do the same things all over again in the human state and expect that you've gotten any reward, any benefit from it, because you have not. You've got to put God in that empty space. You've got to keep on cleaning that house until it stays clean. It becomes a habit to keep it clean. And above all, you've got to get away from the human euphoric state of love into the divine love for God and for Christ. by whatever name you want to call it. Because don't forget that Christ is universal. He is the cornerstone of every religion in this whole universe. He is that one which was the result of the union between God the Father and God the Divine Mother. And He is universal. He is the firstborn of every creature, it says in the Scriptures. So that means that He is that intelligence, that power, that life, that strength, that love, that purity, that everything which is the final state to which man must climb and become one with within himself. If we would use our power of speech to repeat the name of the Lord instead of to use it to gossip, to destroy people, to constantly tear people down, our lives would change in a great big hurry. If we would use our vision to see only the beautiful in everyone and everything that comes before us, and try to bring beauty into our own consciousness, our own person would become beautiful. To bring beauty into the way you furnish your house, in the way you conduct your life, you would start to beautify not only those things around you, but the world around you. And gradually, as this contagious beauty spreads, it would spread to the hearts and the minds of men everywhere, and they would no longer wish to be at war with their brothers. They would no longer wish to kill them. They would no longer wish to have power over them. But they would realize that all the power they ever dreamed of is right within themselves, if they would only make the effort to become one with them, to realize that it's there, to learn how to use it for God and for good. The desire for money has taken over the world. The desire for power has taken over the world. But it isn't good money and it isn't good power. The power of God is the only power on this earth. And we are the temple of God, yet we have made it a den of thieves, as the Christ said. And the gold that we are looking for is not the gold that is buried under the earth and which they are charging such fancy prices for today, but it is the gold of the Spirit. The wine that we would drink is not the alcohol that we put into our bodies and saturate our brains with, but it is the wine of the Spirit. And that wine is the sweetest wine that anybody could drink. Everything that is in that Bible is within each and every man. From the beginning of creation until the end, where the soul finally has climbed to the top of the mountain and has become one with its Maker. And then that one stands tall and straight, in full control. It is totally surrendered to God. But it is not in the form of someone who goes around and wears sackcloth and ashes and acts holier than thou, with a sanctimonious expression on their faces. It is someone who's filled with love, with joy, with laughter, with dancing in the streets, with seeing the beauty of God everywhere, but of harming no man, and least of all, yourself, because you are the keeper of this temple. And it is up to you to clean your house, this house of the Lord, and set your house in order. If you will do this, I promise you, upon my word before God, that your lives will change and you will become Superman. You will become Godman. And yet you will be nothing. In all the humility of which you are capable, you will know in truth that this is the house of the Lord in which you live, and it is your Father who doeth the works.